Welcome to the 254th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are an overview of Patrick's weekend predictions, our weekly look at the NBA, our preview of the Major League Baseball season, and our look at the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com, and we will start in college basketball, where Patrick went 0-4 in his men's NCAA tournament predictions. In the NBA, Patrick went 2-2 with his weekend predictions, so that brings him to a total of 2-6 this week and an overall record of 1,024-669. That's a 60.5% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, I thought a lot of my picks were just sticking to what I had in brackets, maybe not necessarily reevaluating what was going on. And then I thought, you know, there were three really close games in here, obviously. Alabama beat North Carolina 89-87. That was a loss, but, you know, it's a 2-point game. You know, there was the moment where Jalen Withers took that three. That wasn't a very good shot, but, you know, I'm not going to pile on about that. Everybody's already talked about that. Number three, Illinois beat Iowa State 72-69. That was another game where I think Iowa State, their constant lack of offense to start games, which has plagued them all year long, just came back to bite them again, especially playing against a team as good as Illinois. And in the end, they couldn't make up enough scoring to make up the deficit by the end of the game. Tennessee and Creighton was just, you know, really close game throughout, but Tennessee pulled it out. I thought about switching that, even though I had Creighton in my bracket. I definitely thought about switching it to Tennessee because I felt like if Tennessee was going to lose, it'd be because they played a really bad game. And I think they got over that with the game against Texas. That was a horrible game from them, which they tend to do every week or every week and a half or so. But they survived that. So maybe I should have seen them advancing. And then Duke beating Houston, look, they only got 54 points. I think Houston wins that game 100% of the time if Jamal Shedd doesn't get injured. He probably gets a few steals, and Duke might not even end up hitting 50 in that game if he plays. So that one was just kind of an unlucky thing. But, you know, we talked about it on the podcast. Houston seems to always have too many injuries to overcome when it comes to getting to the Final Four. And this year was no different. And then you also add in Jamal Shedd in the middle of a game getting injured. And all of a sudden, you really have those problems compounding. And all of a sudden, you have Houston out of the tournament, the first one seed to lose. Actually, no, North Carolina was technically first to lose, I think, by time. But then in the NBA, I went 2-2, as you said. The Pacers beat the Lakers 109-90. The Clippers beat the Magic 100-97. That game I lost. I got the Lakers-Pacers game right. The Thunder really beat the Suns 128-103. I got that right. They're playing pretty well right now. Then the Timberwolves beat the Nuggets 111-98. Pretty important for home field considerations in the West, but I got that one wrong.
Okay, well, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted on our website on Thursday. Let's now turn our attention to the NBA. And as we do every week, let's start with the most impressive teams of the last week.
I will start with the Warriors, who went 4-0 this week. They beat San Antonio, Charlotte, Orlando, and Miami. We've been talking about how this Warriors team had kind of struggled through the middle of the season for pretty, well, maybe not the middle of the season, but the middle of the late portion of the season for the last few weeks. And looks like Houston might even take their spot for them. But look, even after this week, Houston is still only two games behind the Warriors. But this kind of a week is exactly what Golden State needed. Houston's still 9-1 in their last 10, which is ridiculous. But even though it's not much, they now do have a bit of a cushion separating them in Houston with not many games left for either team. Both of them have 8 games left. But really importantly, the Warriors play 3 games against Texas teams. They already played San Antonio, but they play Dallas next, and then they play at Houston and at Dallas again after that. So, you know, take one of those 2 games against Dallas and beat Houston, and you're probably in a pretty good position at that point. But that Houston game is really important because, you know, it basically counts double since they are playing the team that's in direct contention with them for that final playoff spot or play-in spot. But those 3 games will go a long way towards deciding where the Warriors are seated or if they make the playoffs at all, like I said. Then second, speaking of Dallas, you have the Mavericks. They beat Houston this week and also beat Sacramento twice. Now, the Mavericks are in the really, really crowded middle part of the Western Conference, and anyone is really important in that range. But getting 2 wins over Sacramento specifically had extra significance for Dallas, because if Sacramento had just won one of those games, the Mavs and Kings would be tied for the 6th and 7th spots in the standings going into today. But instead, because the Mavs swept the 2 games, Dallas is in 5th, so completely out of the play-in, and Sacramento is 8th, meaning they'll play on the road in the play-in at Phoenix. So really, really big difference just by 1 game. Frankly, 2 games if you want to look at it that way, because the Kings also, I mean, the first game, the Kings really had no chance, and the Mavericks kind of dominated them, but the second game was closer. So the Kings could have actually pulled that one out, but they didn't. And I think also if the Kings had won that game, I want to say they actually would have the tiebreaker over the Mavs in the season series as well. So that also would play a role in who gets that seed. And then the Kings might be out of the play-in entirely, and the Mavs might be in the play-in. So really interesting situation there. The Mavs did a really good job of securing those victories, knowing how important they are. And I think also the way they've been playing over most of the season when they haven't been injured, I think this team deserves to not be in the play-in. I don't think that. I think New Orleans has been healthier than normal, but still inconsistent. And I think that Phoenix has been really, really underwhelming. And I think same thing goes for the Kings. I really think that if there is a team that deserves to not be in the play-in, I would say Dallas is one of them. Besides obviously the top three, and then the next team I'm going to talk about, that's the LA Clippers. They beat Charlotte, Orlando, and Philly this week. Look, this schedule's not anything ridiculous. Philly still doesn't have Joel Embiid. The Magic are playing well recently. I'll give them credit for that. But, Charlotte's terrible. So this was a take care of business type of week for the Clippers after their mini slump over the last few weeks. And that's exactly what LA did. While they probably won't catch up to the top three of OKC, Denver, and Minnesota, because I think they're 4 games behind that group. 4 games behind, I think, the third place team in that group, which is Minnesota. They could still get home court in a playoff series if they protect their 2-game lead over Dallas for the 4 seed with only 7 or 8 games remaining for each team. So the Clippers having a good week this week. Then moving to the first team in the East on this segment, the Hawks went 3-1 this week. They beat Chicago, Boston, and Portland. They lost to Milwaukee. I don't think the Hawks are necessarily scaring anyone in a postseason matchup, but they are playing their best basketball this season at the right time of the year. We talked, the Celtics talked about how they were kind of using the final few minutes to experiment with some different defenses and try some things out, which is exactly what they should be doing given the cushion that they have in the standings. But at the same time, a win's a win for the Hawks. They got a win over the number one team in the league by record. So that was important. And also, they will need to likely beat Chicago again in the play-in bracket. So that win maybe gave them some confidence, proving that they can do it once, but they probably will need to repeat it in about 2.5 weeks to actually stay alive in the playoffs.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the least impressive teams of the last week as we head towards the end of the NBA regular season.
Well, I talked about the Pelicans already. They went 1-3 this week. They lost to Phoenix, Boston, and OKC. They beat Milwaukee. Look, I'll say this. The Pelicans have had consistency issues all year long, and I've talked about that here a lot. But while I would attribute this bad week more to the tough schedule than their level of play itself, teams in the thick of a playoff race just can't afford 1 in 3 weeks like this. New Orleans needs to get back on track before they end up in the play-in bracket, because right now they are very, very close to being there. And the Suns, actually, who they lost to this week by a lot, were, I think, a game behind them now. So, this is the it's getting to be tough sledding for New Orleans, and I don't think they want to end up in the play-in bracket again, despite the fact that they made it out of it before. You just don't want to be there again. But then you have the Nuggets. They went 1-2. They lost to Minnesota and Phoenix as well, but they beat Cleveland. Look, they were in position to secure the number one seed in the West, had a pretty decent cushion. But not anymore. They're now a half game back of OKC for the one seed, which I think could be really important in the playoffs. I think people are underestimating how important home court advantage can be, especially for a team that is the team to beat. If Denver has, that status, that target on their backs, it's going to be a lot harder to go on the road in a few games and win everything than it is to just be at home for most of those games. So it could be a big deal. We don't know for sure, but for now, that is definitely something to monitor. One of the more interesting races, there are kind of just, three chunks in the west of the teams in the middle. The three at the top, the Clippers are kind of locked into the four seed at this point, honestly. But, that there are the teams from 5 to 8, really, that are all in one giant clump. And then there's the Lakers, Warriors, Rockets at the bottom in the play-in. But then this battle is still an interesting one to watch, even though all three of them have clinched their playoff spot. They still are fighting for something. And it determines who will play, one of the play-in teams, which in all likelihood that include it, it if the season ended today, it would have to include one of Phoenix, LA, or Golden State, which those are three really tough matchups for anybody, especially those two teams at the top who are kind of inexperienced, unlike the Nuggets. Denver and sorry, Minnesota and OKC, not much playoff experience with OKC, a little bit with Minnesota, but a lot of early exits there. So be interesting to watch. But then you have the Bucks. They are in the third position here. They went 1-2 this week. They lost to New Orleans and the Lakers. They beat Atlanta. The Bucks don't really have much to play for, honestly, as they're virtually locked in the two seed in the East. But I think it would still be nice to see this team play a better brand of basketball at the end of the season. They just haven't felt as dominant as they normally are, and they need to get to that level before the playoffs, or they will be in trouble. And I think a lot of teams can pull off the upset on the Bucks if they keep playing the way that they've been playing for the last few weeks. Then you have the Cavs. They lost to Denver and Charlotte, and they beat Philly. Look, a loss to Charlotte is just not one any team in playoff contention can afford to take. That is exactly what the Cavs did this week. They were lucky to eke out a victory over Philly to avoid an 0-3 week, but the Knicks and Magic are both within one game in the third seed. And Cleveland could easily go all the way from that seed to not even having home court in the first round if they don't pick up their level of play in the next few weeks.
All right, that wraps up our look at the NBA. Let's now turn our attention for the first time in a while to Major League Baseball action. The Major League Baseball season kicked off for all teams last week. Don't have a full week of action yet, so we're going to start with a relatively brief season preview segment. And Patrick, we'll just go with playoff predictions. How about your predictions for division winners and wild cards in the American League?
Well, I think this is most of these picks are probably pretty popular. I wouldn't say all of these are favorites or, the com I don't think there's a really that much of a consensus on a lot of these divisions. But well, there are two divisions that have a consensus, but we'll talk about them last. I think the Orioles are going to win the AL East. I think the Yankees are really, really close. I think the Orioles just, they did what they did last season, and they're getting better this year and calling up even more prospects eventually. So their talent level is going to improve not only from last year, but throughout the season, as the season goes on. And they added Corbin Burns in the offseason. So I'm liking their chances to win the AL East, and maybe even be the team that has home field in the AL. I think they could really, really end up with a good record here. But then you have the AL Central. I'd say I think it's a pretty common consensus, maybe not a consensus, but it's a pretty common thing to say the Twins are going to win this division. I think they're going to win this division. And then I think the Astros are going to win the AL West. Even though the AL West are really, 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 it's really up in the air in the AL West. I just don't see Houston losing their handle on it. The Rangers, they obviously won the World Series last year, but people forget they kind of, I guess, it's kind of a thing that, the Diamondbacks, everybody's treating like a fluky run because they didn't win the World Series. And the Rangers, everybody is treating like they won their division when they didn't. It was a close race, but they choked the division at the end. And I think the Astros are going to be better this year. I think once they get their pitching back, I think they're going to be able to be a strong contender. They're going to be fine. Then in the wild cards, I do have the Yankees and the Rangers. Very, very easily making it. I think that they will, again, I think those two division races will be close. And I think that those two teams just don't end up on the right side of it, but they still make the playoffs. And then I have the Blue Jays. This one could be the Rays, could be a lot of teams, could be the Tigers in a really weak division, could be the Guardians in that same weak division. It's really hard to know, honestly. I went with the Blue Jays just because I feel like overall the talent on their roster is just better than a lot of those other teams. But they will play a harder schedule because they play in the same division as the Rays, as the Yankees, and as the Orioles. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds as the season goes on.
All right. Well, I'll give you my thoughts here. I'm going to flip the Yankees and Baltimore with you. I'm going to say the Yankees win the AL East and Baltimore's a wild card. Also going to flip Texas Houston because, as you said, people forget that Texas actually didn't win the division last year. So I think that they make that a focus this year. They win the division. The Astros get it as a wild card. And then, as you mentioned, and for the reasons you mentioned, my hometown Detroit Tigers, a surprise wild card contender. I think they've got enough talent and they're in a very weak division, whereas those folks in the American League East just are going to beat up on each other all year. Even the Red Sox are starting off strong. So little slight difference there, but I think we're thinking along the same track. All right, let's move over to the National League and your thoughts on division winners and wild card playoff winners or
Well,
bid takers.
there are two very easily decided divisions. The Braves and the Dodgers are going to win the NL East and the NL West. This is not a surprise to anybody. Those are the two best teams in baseball, the teams to beat. And you know, I guess the Phillies are good enough to at least give the Braves a run for their money. But we always say that, and they still lose the division by like 8 or 10 games, and they still, by the way, end up with a good record. It's just that the Braves are just dominant. But then you have the Cubs, for me, winning the Central. Look, I don't think any of the teams in this division are division winning worthy teams, if that makes any sense. I think like there's a bunch of 85, 86 win teams in this division. I don't think there is a 90 win team here. And I think frankly, that's what the Central used to be like pretty much every year, when, maybe 5, 6 years ago, when the Cardinals were winning it a lot when the Cubs had their down years, but also, the Brewers weren't quite at that level yet. And even frankly, when the Brewers started to win that division, when the Cardinals would have an off year just being the wild card. But anyway, I'm going to pick the Cubs. I think the Cardinals are a close second. I don't think the Brewer, I think I like the Brewers' talent long term. And I think that they might have hit the reset button at the right time. But at the same time, I don't think hitting the reset button allows you to compete again the very next year. And that's what they would be aiming to do this year. So I'm just not going to put my stock into that. I could totally see them just, maybe the reset wasn't as hard of a reset as we thought it was, and they still end up being fine this year and they do make the playoffs, but I just don't see it at the moment. Then we'll go to the wild cards. I think it'll be the Phillies and the Diamondbacks once again. The two teams that matched up in the NLCS last year, still taking the wild cards again like they did last year. And then again, one of the losers of the Cubs Cardinals division or the Padres or the Giants. I'm taking the Giants reluctantly because of their pitching staff and just the depth in general. Their bullpen is a little bit weaker than it has been in the past, but that's something that you can fix at the trade deadline, honestly. If it's really, really bad, they can literally just go trade a few okay prospects of theirs and get a better bullpen. But I think that the Giants have Blake Snell. That's going to be a big deal. They have Blake Snell and Logan Webb, which is probably, it might be the top starting pitching duo in the league. I don't want to go out and say that for sure because I'm probably forgetting a really good duo that's out there. But look, that's a Cy Young winner, another guy who probably will win a Cy Young very, very soon, and I think was second or third last year already. So, that's a really, really good start for a pitching staff. I think Jung Hoo Lee is going to be a lot better than people are assuming he's going to be right away, just because he's a high contact player, and that is something that works very well in terms of transitioning from another league to MLB. I also think Matt Chapman, people aren't giving enough credit to them for making that signing. The Giants just made a lot of tiny improvements, but at the same time, in terms of not, they never technically signed anybody who was I guess like a huge, huge free agent. I think Blake Snell does qualify as that, but other than Snell, they didn't make any big splashes. But at the same time, if you make a bunch of moves that are just under the big splash category, which they probably made like three or four of, I think that's enough to become a playoff contender. And I think that, even though, again, it's reluctant, I think their lineup will be better than people give it credit for as well. So, still a reluctant pick, but I'll pick the Giants. If it wasn't them, I think I'd probably pick the Padres as the second team there.
Well, and I'm going to basically agree with you on everything, except I'm going to say that the Cardinals take that NL Central title from the Cubs. I don't know. It's the Cubs. And then reluctantly, I will pick the Padres for that other wild card spot. All right, let's move our attention over to the predictions for the postseason series themselves, championship series, and World Series. Who you got?
I have the Astros over the Yankees in six. I have the Dodgers over the Braves in seven. Obviously, ALCS for the Astros, NLCS for the Dodgers. And then I have the Dodgers getting their revenge, beating the Astros in seven games with home field, this time with LA hosting. So even if there were still trash cans in Houston, it wouldn't matter. But look, the Dodgers, actually, I think game seven might have been at home last World Series too. But anyway, not important. Bad attempt at a joke. But look, I think the Dodgers are just, I think they're the best team in the league. I think this is pretty obvious. I think everybody knows that. The favorite pretty much never wins in MLB, but you know, maybe MLB will take a little hint from the NCAA this year and just have a completely dominant team all year long that also continues their success into the postseason. I think that this team is hungrier. I think that they have, you know, not to say that some of the Dodgers players were unmotivated or were lazy in the playoffs or anything, but you know, adding a guy like Shohei Ohtani, who's played like I don't even remember if it's one or if it's zero playoff games ever. And then you also have Teoscar Hernandez, who, you know, has been on a lot of teams that have underachieved in the postseason and been out pretty early. But has, you know, so he's been in the moments. He just hasn't really had his opportunities to really do anything because his teams are out so early. I think you add in that hunger to a mix of team, to a mix of players who's already very, 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 very talented. You know, you add in Yamamoto, who will be by that time of the year better because he'll be completely settled in. You add Glasnow, who, if he's healthy, will be fighting for a World Series for the first time, really. Obviously, I think, well, he did pitch in the World Series against the Dodgers in 2020, but he'll be doing that again this time, hoping to win. Then you're going to have maybe Kershaw thinking about his last go around if he's healthy again. Walker Buehler's going to come back and really just be hungry just to get on the field, frankly. So, you know, there's a lot of, I think there's a lot more motivation on a player by player basis for the Dodgers this year than there has been in past years. And I think that'll play a role. And I think that's the reason the Dodgers won the World Series this year.
All right. Well, I've got the same teams fighting it out, but I've got the Yankees over Houston in seven. I've got the Dodgers over the Braves in six. And then I've got the Dodgers over the Yankees in six games in what will be the highest rated World Series in decades. At least that's what I'm hoping for. And I want to be a little different than you, but I don't know. Maybe it's a little recency bias with how the Yankees have started the season this year. Again, injuries. We'll see what happens. A lot can happen in 162 game season over the span of spring, all summer, and then when it gets cold in the fall. So, with those predictions in hand, let's just move over to your predictions for postseason awards.
Well, AL Rookie of the Year, I have it being Evan Carter. I think it's pretty likely to be, it's going to be someone from the Rangers or the Orioles, frankly. It's going to be Evan Carter or Whit Langford, or it's going to be Jackson Holliday, or, you know, any of the Orioles prospects that they choose to bring up. And then in the NL, I have it being Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I think Jung-Hoo Lee will also make a strong push for this, but I think that Yamamoto will just get better as the year goes on. I think we saw that in his second start after his first start wasn't so good. And I'm not even basing it off of that. If anything, I was basing it off the fact that I think the first start was a one-off and he'll be more comfortable. AL Cy Young, I have Corbin Burns in his new location. The AL, really, without Gerrit Cole, there is just a massive void for the AL Cy Young. I mean, the guys who are top three in odds, you know, top, even top five, just, I think you could ask casual baseball fans, they don't know four of the five, and maybe Corbin Burns is the only one they know. So, look, as much as I'd love to see a great story win it in the AL, I'm going to stick with the conventional pick. I also think that the Orioles won't get much love in individual awards other than Rookie of the Year, but this would be the one where they could take it home. And I think they'll get credit for a good season, and Corbin Burns will be the leader of that. And then I have Spencer Strider in the NL. Barely lost it last year. I don't think Snell is putting up that type of a season again this year. And I also, especially because he's going to be in the same division and, you know, the team's gotten more comfortable hitting him, I would assume. And then you also have the fact that Spencer Strider added in his curveball and also all the offseason buzz about him. I think it's just tailor-made for him to win. The AL MVP, I'm going a little bit off the board. I'm going Kyle Tucker. He was top five last year. I think he should have been higher. People just don't give enough respect to him. And I think that if Houston's going to win the division this year, he'll show off, you know, his really, he's a jack of all trades. He'll be a great defender. He'll steal bases. He'll hit a lot of home runs and he'll lead the league in RBIs again. And I think as a result, he will win MVP. And then this was not recency bias. I literally wrote this on like Thursday last week. Mookie Betts for me is NL MVP. And now it seems like a cheap pick, but at the same time, look, he played amazing all last year. He just got beat because Ronald Acuña quite literally created the 40-70 club for himself. There was no way anybody else is going to win that award. But Mookie Betts clearly had an MVP level season last year, and I think he's going to repeat it again this year. And this time actually win it with not necessarily a regression from Ronald Acuña, but not, you know, a 40-70 season once again.
Yeah, certainly going to help Mookie Betts, believe it or not, get better to have Shohei and Freddie Freeman behind him. I think he's going to see a lot of pitches. All right, let's that wraps up our look at our preview of Major League Baseball. We'll have a look at Major League Baseball next week, but let's turn our attention to college basketball with review of Sweet 16 and Elite Eight action in the men's NCAA basketball tournament, starting with a recap of the Sweet 16.
Well, UConn destroyed everybody. That's pretty much what happened in the East. No, I'm kidding. Look, they beat San Diego State by 30, 82 to 52. Then Illinois beat Iowa State, and we talked about that on our predictions. So I'll move on to the West in the Sweet 16. Number six Clemson beat number two Arizona, 77 to 72. That was a really surprising upset. Caleb Love, though, just had a horrible game, which, frankly, North Carolina guards having terrible games in this region was a common theme. As in the second game of that region, Mark Sears just completely took over as Alabama beat North Carolina 89-87. RJ Davis and Caleb Love, I think, tied each other for the most three-point misses without a make by any player in an NCAA tournament game. They both went 0-for-9 from three, which is just... Yeah, I can't really say anything about it. It's just bad. And, you know, you look at how close these games are. Even if they had just stopped shooting, which I know is not what you're supposed to do as, you know, a team leader or a star on a team. But even if they had stopped shooting and, you know, made a decision to get an assist here or there on some of those threes, their teams probably could have won the game. But then in the Midwest, you have a number one Purdue beating number five Gonzaga, 80-68. The Midwest, of course, did turn into the fake Maui Invitational. Or maybe the March Maui Invitational, you could say, instead of it being in November. But Purdue won the first rematch against Gonzaga. And then number two, Tennessee beat number three, Creighton, 82-75 to set up a rematch with Purdue in the Elite Eight. In the South, number 11, NC State beat number two, Marquette, 67-58. NC State, part of this run, I will say, is an uncanny ability to have players miss free throws who are 87%. I mean, look. Look, I love NC State. Let me go on the record and say that. This is a great story. It's really, really fun to watch. They have no business being here, and they're still here. And that's the greatest part about March Madness. But NC State wouldn't have made the tournament if it weren't for an 87% free throw shooter missing both free throws, which is exactly what happened against Virginia with 3 seconds left, which NC State then banked in a buzzer beater just to send the game to overtime. That was in the ACC quarterfinals, I think. Maybe the semifinals, but doesn't really matter. It was in the ACC tournament, let alone the NCAA tournament. In this game, Marquette missed about 80 threes that I could have made. But look, there's something about this team. The basketball gods in a very chalk tournament want this team to win, and frankly, I'm glad they're winning. This is just a ridiculous run. But I'm just happy I get to see DJ Burns play more. You know, very, very happy about that. Then number four, Duke beat number one, Houston, 54-51. Like I said, just a really sad way for Houston to end their season, considering all the things they accomplished and you know, just have it all end basically because of Jamal Shedd's injury. You know, they're already a really, really weak team in terms of depth because of the other three injuries that they've had. Terrence Arsenault would have been able to fill this void in a normal year, but he's out for the season with an injury. And, you know, Ramon Walker just came back from his injury in that game against Texas A&M the week before. So they're just depleted, honestly. And with another injury, especially to their best player, there was no way they were going to survive that, unfortunately. But then in the Elite Eight, number one UConn beat number three Illinois, 77-52, meaning that somehow, some way, Northwestern actually had the least margin of defeat against UConn in the tournament on the way to the Final Four. UConn at this point, if they win the championship, I think this is the most dominant 2-year run any team has ever had. Maybe you could argue one of the other repeat champions. Maybe I don't know enough because I'm too young. But look, this team has never come close to losing any of the games they've played in the tournament for 2 years. It's just ridiculous. And they also haven't, I mean, what? They lost on a neutral court, I think one time or zero times over the last 2 years. No one non-conference beat them in the last 2 years ever. They lost because Klingon was injured once against Seton Hall. They lost at, I mean, Creighton's the only team to beat UConn this year, in 2024 as a calendar year. So look, this seems just ridiculous. The dominance continues. I don't think it's going to stop, frankly. But then I'll move on from them, talk about their opponent, who is number four Alabama out of the West. Of course, the two the football schools, the typical CFP semifinal, but this time to make the Final Four for each of them would have been the first Final Four in school history. But you got Alabama. They win it all. They end up going to, everybody always says we want Bama, and now Bama has to chant, we want UConn. And I don't think Bama wants UConn. I don't think most teams ever want Alabama, frankly, in football, but it's gonna happen. And I'm not so sure they're gonna win. And then, of course, in the Midwest, or should I say the Maui Invitational Finals, Purdue beat number two Tennessee 72-66, continuing their dominance over Tennessee in really any form of postseason play. Whether it was the right decision or not, Purdue benefited from a terrible call and beat Tennessee in a bowl game a few years ago. They also beat them in the tournament when Carson Edwards was there. Again, they beat them in the Maui Invitational earlier this year. Then they beat them again this year. For some reason, very weird mini rivalry there. I feel like that happens a lot with Big Ten and SEC teams. They just happen to play each other a lot when they're consistently at the top of a sport. It happened with Michigan and Florida a few years ago when they kept playing in the NCAA tournament and in college football bowl games and in just regular season games. But then in the South, the old Tobacco Road rivalry, NC State beat number four Duke 76-64. I don't know how Kyle Filipowski didn't take advantage of having DJ Burns guarding him most of the game, but he didn't. And NC State, especially DJ Burns, well, actually, no, specifically, DJ Burns did take advantage of the fact that he had Kyle Filipowski guarding him. This is a matchup where on one end of the floor, one of the players was going to have the advantage every single time, and it was always going to be the player on offense. DJ Burns can't step out and guard Kyle Filipowski. Kyle Filipowski cannot guard DJ Burns in the post. And instead of, maybe utilizing that spacing well, Duke just kind of didn't space the floor well enough, didn't get their shots to fall, and DJ Burns did. And he just bullied Filipowski on the post, and really anybody that Duke tried to throw at him, whether it was Ryan Young or even Mitchell a few times. But look, NC State, just what a crazy run. If there was ever a year where it looked like that streak was going to be broken of a five seed or lower making the Final Four, it looked like it was going to be this year, especially after Alabama beat Clemson. And yet here we are. The tournament always has some little bit of craziness left for us. Who knows? Maybe NC State even beats Purdue, but that's not what I'm going to predict. Instead, I'm going to go with UConn beating Alabama. I'm going to go with Purdue beating NC State, and I'm going to go with UConn beating Purdue. Sorry, it's boring, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but I could see NC State beating Purdue if DJ Burns can keep Edie far enough away from the basket without getting in foul trouble. Unfortunately, I think Edie gets the calls and DJ spends too much time on the bench, which, as we saw in the first half of the Elite Eight game, really, he's the difference maker for them. So I'm gonna agree with you on your predictions. But like you said, we both love DJ Burns. We've loved him for a long time, and we'd like to see him in the finals. All right. Well, that wraps up our look at NCAA tournament basketball action. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, April 9th, where we will once again look at Patrick's weekend predictions, have another look at NBA action, talk about the first few weeks of the MLB season, and we'll be able to talk about the Final Four and the NCAA Men's Basketball National Championship to see whether things turned out as we think they will. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his picks for next weekend's games that we posted as always on Thursdays, and his MLB power rankings, which will be posted tomorrow. All of that content on our website, 4thand24.com. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.